Hello and welcome to the new episode of Schauplatz, so to speak, in the original English version today, because I have none other than legendary Craig Sestero as a guest. He is well known for Tommy Wiseau's best worst movie of all time, The Room, which came out in 2003. There he not only played Mark, one of the main roles, but also was responsible for many other departments. Over the years, The Room developed into an absolute cult film, not least because of the circle of friends around Paul Rudd and Jonah Hill, who made the film, which was shown in regular midnight screenings in LA, better and better known. Craig elaborated on his experiences of the truly insane filming in his book The Disaster Artist, which was used as a basis for James Franco's 2017 film adaptation of the same name. Franco won a Golden Globe for his portrayal of Tommy Wiseau, and the screenplay adaptation also received an Oscar nomination. Meanwhile, Craig was writing a screenplay and reunited with Tommy Wiseau in the movie Best Friends. He then presented this in 2018 at the Zoopalast. The guy, who was alone 3 hours early with a huge sports bag, and I were on the same wavelength and talked for ages about our favorite films together. We became friends and have stayed in touch ever since that day. Craig meanwhile starred in the very charming B-splatter film Cyst and appeared in the Netflix series The Haunting of Bly Manor, but also kept showing me excerpts from a new film that he was supposed to be directing for the first time, or he asked me for opinions. His directing debut, Miracle Valley, had its first screenings in autumn 2021 before I had the honor of presenting the film together with Craig as the German premiere at Zoopalast Berlin last week. Anyone expecting a trash spectacle may be disappointed. Rather, in this mixture of thriller and horror, Craig creates beguilingly beautiful pictures, pays tribute to his favorite classic horror films, concentrates on a harmonious atmosphere, and loosens up the action with many funny moments. The first part of the podcast now focuses on Craig's own cinematic experiences. After that, you'll enjoy the Q&A recording from our screening, where you'll learn even more about Miracle Valley and some things about The Room. And now I wish you a lot of fun with Asked with my friend Craig Sestero. First visit to a cinema.
My very first visit to a cinema that I remember was The Empire Strikes Back. And I saw it in Walnut Creek, California, in the Dome Theater, which at the time was the exquisite sound, Dolby sound, big screen. And I remember the impact of John Williams' score, the Imperial March, Darth Vader. I didn't quite understand the ending, but I knew it was impactful between the saber fight between Luke Skywalker and Darth Vader. And it left a huge impression on me. I remember getting home and watching my mom go up the stairs as she hummed the Imperial March soundtrack. And I remember knowing that that movie would be a huge impact on me. And I'm so happy the Ewoks weren't included in that film, because Empire Strikes Back was an incredible experience. I must have been 4 years old or 5 years old maybe. But I never forgot those moments and the score especially.
Favorite cinema.
My favorite cinema, I've been fortunate to travel quite a bit of the world and see a lot of movie theaters. But if I had to pick one to have my big premiere and see a movie with a crowd, I would have to go with the Zoopalast in Berlin. It feels like you're in an exotic upscale spaceship. And the seat design is beautiful. It packs in a lot of people, but it still feels intimate. It's just one of those theaters when you walk in, it makes you want to make movies, and it elevates the experience. So Zoopalast in Berlin is the one theater that I would say has impressed me the most.
The perfect cinema experience.
Yeah, my perfect cinema experience is usually with two or three friends. If you come with a bigger group, then it sort of gets lost. But the intimacy of about three people in your group sitting front and center. A friend of mine worked at Lucasfilm in the 80s, and he told me they designed it so Dolby sound would hit the people right in the dead center of the theater. So I think you get in early, you sit right in the center, middle level. I don't like to be too far. I don't like to be too close. I don't like to be too far to the right or too far to the left. I like to be right in the middle. Although it's a little nerve-wracking if you got to leave, people might get uncomfortable with that. But I believe once you sit in the theater and the movie starts, you do not leave under any circumstance, because you might miss the pivotal moment, a look, dialogue, something that might mark you. So there's no point to go to the movie theater to leave to go to the bathroom. You got to do all that preparation before. So you sit in the movie theater, and my favorite is really great popcorn that's fresh with some butter, and just a glass of water.
The most memorable encounter.
The most impressive person I've met through my years, I would probably have to say, was the director, Paul Thomas Anderson. Because when I wrote The Disaster Artist in 2012 and 2013, I always wanted that story of The Disaster Artist book to become a film. And I studied Paul Thomas Anderson's films, Boogie Nights and The Master, in the hope that my story, the characters, could emulate something worthy of an interesting film. And I studied those films, you know, endlessly. And in 2017, actually it was January 7th, 2018, at the Palm Springs Film Festival, I met Paul Thomas Anderson at the bar after he did a screening of Phantom Thread, and I approached him and I told him this, and we both were like very excited to meet each other. He told me he enjoyed The Room very much. He quotes it with his family. He loved The Disaster Artist. And we both walked away after meeting each other and told the festival organizers, "Oh my God, I'm starstruck. I just met Paul Thomas Anderson." And he went to the other guy and said, "I'm starstruck. I just met the guy from The Room." So unfortunately, I don't have quite the film credentials that PTA has, but nonetheless, it was pretty incredible to meet a filmmaker that inspired me in that way.
My alternative job.
If I wasn't making films or writing scripts, I would probably be a soccer player. Soccer was my first passion. My mom was French, so growing up in the States, soccer wasn't the most popular sport, but it was the sport that I love playing. And I set some records for goals in my local county, and I just was a natural born soccer player. So if I didn't see the movie Home Alone at 12 and want to then start writing scripts, I probably would have pursued soccer, and I might be playing for the French national team. We'll never know.
The weirdest experience.
I would say the weirdest experience I ever had in a cinema was in New York City. We were doing a screening of one of the movies I made called Best Friends Volume 2. And it was in November of 2018. And the movie hit a point where there's a ethereal dream sequence that's taking place. And the character is having a nightmare, and he's grabbing his head and he's looking around and the screen's shaking. For some reason, inside that large theater, there was a smoke alarm test. So the alarm and the lights inside the theater flashed with that scene for 5 minutes, and the entire audience thought, "This is riveting." They matched the lighting sequence to fit the movie, and then they realized, "Oh, this is a mistake, and there's a false fire alarm going on," and everybody had to evacuate the movie for 30 minutes, and everyone came out saying, "Oh, we were so into it, we thought that was..." And so I wondered, should we incorporate that into every screening to make the film pop a little bit more? But that was really weird to have everybody come out mid-movie. I'm standing there and they're like, "We just saw you in there. We thought that was, you know, a really creative choice." So I would say that's probably my weirdest movie experience.
My dream film.
I would love to work with the producers that make David Fincher's films. I feel like David Fincher's movies have always been ahead of the curve. They've always been willing to take risks. If you look at Zodiac, Fight Club, Seven, they all were ahead of their time. They all made audiences uncomfortable. Some of those movies were not appreciated until much years later. And I just love the idea of the darkness and the tones of those movies. And, you know, when you make a movie, you really hope for cultural impact beyond its release, 5 years, 10 years, 20 years. So those movies speak to many people. And I would just love to work with David Fincher and his producing team.
Ladies and gentlemen, give it up for Drexel Sterrow.
What a story, Mark.
Hey, you have the blood, right?
What a funny thrill, man.
What's up? What'd you think?
Yeah, I really loved it. I expected it to be not as funny.
Okay, well.
And still thrilling. But it was intended to be funny, so
intended
compared
to be
the room.
Yeah. Actually, really quickly, we have one of the actors who is also in the film, Kristen, part of the cult, is here. So let's welcome Kristen up here as well.
Hey, would you like to say anything?
What's up, Germany?
So, Craig, could you tell us, how did you come up with the idea to Miracle Valley?
Like I was saying earlier, I've always been fascinated by cults. And I went on a drive when I was living in Arizona, and I came across this old abandoned church. And it was in the middle of nowhere, and I drove up to it, and these two dudes walked out and approached me. And they're like, there's no trespassing here. What are you doing here? And I asked them, I was like, what is this church about? And they said, like I said, it was a cult. In the 60s, this preacher got the whole town to turn against the cops. And he was saying, I'll give you eternal life. You know, I can bring people back from the dead based on their blood type. And so they asked me if I wanted to join. I'm like, sure. And then I went back and I wrote this script. And just cults have always fascinated me. Manson, Terror in the Jungle. And I just wanted to make a movie that, you know, for you guys, it was quick. It was, you know, 90 minutes or less and was fun.
Thanks. How was it for you to direct a movie for the first time? I'm sure you must have learned many things from The Room and many things to avoid, I guess.
Yeah, I learned a lot. That was really good film school with The Room because, you know, we were making a movie that only one person on that set understood. You know, we were supposed to be making like a romantic drama. And it wasn't that. And so anytime people would try to bring something up, he'd always be like, I'm sorry, you want to be actor, act like one. So I realized how important it was to collaborate with your people and your cast. And in fact, I had Kristen read the script early on, and I was trying to figure out what to do with this amazing location we had, Falling Water, the Frank Lloyd Wright House, which is at the end. And I was like, does it come in the beginning? And Kristen's like, it's so easy. Just put it at the end. It's a clinic. And it was like the light went off. And I was like, it's so important to work with your team and collaborate with your team. So with directing, it's sort of the same thing. It's just casting the right actor and letting them play out their role. So, you know, that's really what I learned on the set of The Room is collaboration.
Thanks. Could you tell a little bit more about the house from North by Northwest?
Yeah, so Hitchcock made North by Northwest, and he tried to replicate Falling Water, which is a house that's built on a waterfall. And I took a tour of that late 2018, and they said they'll give me one day to film there. And I thought for sure, like Hitchcock or Spielberg or somebody's filmed there. And it's like, nope, it's a Greg Sestero horror film. So, but it's an incredible house. If you guys ever get a chance to go to Pittsburgh, Pennsylvania, it's just a house literally constructed into a waterfall, and I thought it's a great setting for a cult.
What was the most memorable thing when shooting Miracle Valley, maybe?
Yeah, ask her that first.
Well, I have a few, actually. So the part where Sarah's running back, I don't know if you all saw when she's like, oh, ow! You all saw that, right? That was real. She actually broke her ankle right when that happened, and she was trying to play it off. So she actually took that like a champ, right? And then the other part was when the girl actually sliced my throat. Well, there's... She really did. She actually, like, she missed the cut where you're supposed to pull and went over over it and actually gave me a little bit of a nick there. And I actually, when I fell to the floor, I actually slipped. And so I kind of go down pretty hard and pretty fast. And they're like, why'd she do that? I was like, did I slipped? And I was like, oh, my God. So that was kind of rough. But there's a lot of things about this film that were pretty interesting, creepy, and... a lot of fun.
I would say for me, it was getting killed by a camera. For some reason, I thought filming in the desert would be great, nice weather. No, it was freezing cold the entire time. I had to be on the ground in the dirt with like scorpions and spiders surrounding me. And the actor who played Father Jake, Rick, was literally choking me as hard as he could. Which is great, but so I was basically fighting for my life during that scene, and I'd say that was probably the most fun.
Z's axe. Oh, so yeah. The guy who had the axe on the back of his head, oh my gosh, the makeup work that went into that and the special effects was amazing. And he's sitting there and he's kind of like, okay, don't hit my axe, watch out, guys. And he'd start hitting us from the back with his thingy, and we're like, oh, sorry, we're good. That was kind of funny. And my voice actually was gone completely. So I called Greg and I said, hey, you might want to get a new girl for this role because my voice is gone. And the next, you know, he's like, no, just show up. So if you actually listen to my voice, it's a lot more like rasp, more than it is now. And I was like, and I'm like, can you hear me now? They're like, a little louder, Kristen. I was like, okay.
It was true because I had to kiss her, and then she got me sick.
Go. No, that's not what happened. That is not what happened. He wishes I got him sick. That is not what happened.
I was only sick for one night, though. It was all right. Yeah. The camera don't lie.
Two more questions that are not referred to the movie. You're like the only person that I know where I could say, better call Saul, and you actually could call Saul. Could you tell us a little bit more about the craziest people you could meet through your...
Yeah, I was... So how many people love Breaking Bad or Better Call Saul? So I Breaking Bad is one of my favorite shows. When we made The Disaster Artist, we had Bob Odenkirk, who plays Saul, and Bryan Cranston in the movie. So one of the days Bob Odenkirk was filming the acting scene, he was the acting teacher... And I went to the set because I really wanted to meet him, but I wasn't thinking about it because they were filming. So I went in to give James, who was in character as Tommy, a quick note about something Tommy would say. And I felt a tap on my back, and it was Bob Odenkirk. And he talked about how he had read the book, and he loved the movie. We got a picture together for his son. And so we became pals, and we've kept in contact ever since. And I was passing through Albuquerque, New Mexico, and I went to the car wash. And I sent him a photo, and we ended up meeting up, and we stayed in touch. He's incredible, and so he's probably the coolest person on my phone.
And I'd love the audience to also be aware of the PTA story. Tell us the PTA story, please.
Yeah, for Paul Thomas Anderson fans, one of the greatest filmmakers, and I studied a lot of his movies when I was writing The Disaster Artist, like Boogie Nights and The Master. And so I met him at a film festival, and I went up to him, and I was like, hey, thank you so much for your work. It meant so much to me. And he's like, hey, I love your movie. We quote The Room with my kids. They're always yelling, you're tearing me apart. And so I walked away, and I went to my friend who was running the film festival and was like, I can't believe I met PTA. And then he went to the other person running the film festival, and he's like, I'm starstruck. I met the guy from The Room. So it was like kind of concerning for American film, but beautiful at the same time.
Thanks. Before I open for the audience, one more last question. What can we expect next from you? I heard you've been locating Iceland.
So I really love taking weird life experiences and turning them into scripts. So while I was living in Arizona, I got really into the whole UFO culture. And I took a UFO night tour, and so I've written a script about a UFO abduction story that I hope to make next. So next thing, actually, that kind of looks like a spaceship. We'll have to do the premiere here again.
Let's hope that. So has anyone from the audience questions? Okay, over there.
Hey, Greg, it's a good film. It's
a bad film. Thank you.
Greg, it's an honor to be able to talk to you. Your book was one of the funniest but also most touching books I've ever read. It was just amazing. And I mainly just wanted to say that I had such respect for you because I think there was a real chance with your book just to sort of beat Tommy Wiseau down. And I felt like you really tried to honor his personality and his persona as well. And I just wanted to say thank you for that because, you know, people come in all shapes and sizes. And I just think you showed him a lot of respect in the way you wrote the book. Thanks a lot.
Thank you very much. Appreciate it.
Hey, Greg, thanks for coming out. Really fun movie.
There's no German accents. What's going on?
Yeah.
I already did that.
Yeah, wir können es auch machen. I'm obsessed with the Coca-Cola jacket. Oh, no. Can I just ask, like, where did that come from?
It was...
23.
It was her idea. No, So I was looking... I always feel like wardrobe for characters is huge. I mean, I lucked out with that sleeveless red shirt that was just in my wardrobe for the room. And so I was looking at different outfits, and I was going for like a 70s style. And so I saw that jacket, and I thought that's totally what this character would wear. You know, just being like a entitled dipshit photographer, I thought this wraps it up perfectly. So I just went for it. And it was a Diesel jacket that Coca-Cola sponsored. So we talked to Diesel, and they're like, go for it. So, but we didn't drink any Coke on the set, unfortunately.
Thank you.
Any more questions from the audience?
Hi, Greg. It was a really fun movie to watch. I just have one question, since it was your first time directing, and I think acting, of course, not the first time, but the combi, a lot of people do, and one never has the possibility to ask, is it hard to star in your own movie and direct it as well? Like, do you have such high stuff for yourself to accomplish that it makes it harder for you to act?
Yeah, it's not something I'd want to do very often, but it was just one of those movies that I felt like I was living in the environment that I wrote the script in. So I had traveled to these locations and had basically filmed these scenes in my head. So, and also one of the things I always wondered when an actor directs himself, you know, how does that work? And so we had a really good team of people watching cameras. And it was like the only time I never really focused on my acting. I was just like, I'm just going to play myself. So it was very liberating in a lot of ways. But like I said earlier, if you have the right team, then I think you can pull it off.
Okay, thank you.
Thank you. Yeah.
Hey. Hello, this is Eva, your biggest fan up here, Greg.
Why are you sitting so far back?
Because somebody put me here. I suppose it was Nico, but doesn't matter. I've got a good view from up here. I wanted to know if you did also quite a lot of improvisation during the shoot, or did you stick very much to the lines?
Yeah, you didn't let me improv much in Sis, which was good. We had a few lines that we played with. You know, I feel like a lot of times actors are going to come in with their own feel, and it's really important to let that happen. I think you ad-libbed. Did you ad-lib the kissing scene? No, I'm not sure. So I think it's always good to give a little bit of flow. And so there's a little bit of ad-libbing going on.
Okay, thank you. And I really liked the film. It was funny, and it was full of suspense, and I was screaming several times.
Yeah, I'm just really bummed that like he lost his camera, but...
Yes, definitely.
Thank you. Any more questions?
How about one for Kristen? Let's ask one for Kristen.
Hands up.
Yeah, hi, Greg.
I was surprised to see you on the Netflix show. I don't know what the original title is. I think The Haunting of Bly Manor. It was just some brief moments, but how did you get there?
Yeah, The Haunting of Bly Manor, it was super cool. I was doing a horror convention. I've never done a convention before. And within 30 minutes, this actress walked up to me and she said, "Hey, I'm not a stalker." But she said, "My husband really loved your book and he wants you to be on his show." And I thought, okay, like, what porno is this, you know? And then she mentioned The Haunting of Hill House and Mike Flanagan. And I was like, you got to be... She's like, she'll text you right now. So... within 15 minutes, I got a text from Mike Flanagan, and he said he really wanted to adapt Disaster Artist, and he offered me a role in the show. He's like, whatever role you want, we film in 2 weeks, just let me know. And I went up there, and it was incredible. So I played the fiancé in the first and last episode, and it was great. So I can't ever say that The Room didn't get me an acting role.
Questions?
As a woman starring in a horror movie, is it actually more fun to be the final girl or to, die in a really fun and cool way?
Honestly? Okay, so I don't know if anybody has seen Best Friends. Fiends, have anybody seen it? Okay, so you already know that he has casted me as the villain. All right. I actually, thank you, and I survived in that one. But this one was actually a lot more cool for me. Because I got to be a little extra mean, but then it was cooler to just kind of get killed off, and you're like, all right, I did my job, I'm done, but that was so cool. Was it okay? You know, but it is more nerve-wracking because you want the shot to be so good, and I think if I would have had a few more tries in that, I would have allowed the blood to, like, pour out a little bit more if I could have, but I do think it's a lot more fun if you get killed off. I think that's why you killed yourself.
I told her, let's try to do something really different here for you. Just, you know, we're going to give you a really different role.
Make you a slut again. And then... yeah. I'm really a nice girl, guys.
Any more questions over there?
Hey. Hi, you guys. How many days did you shoot the movie in?
It was like 25 days. So it was basically the month of November. My DP, who's a friend of mine, he said, you know, why don't we push this? It seems a little bit rushed. Why don't we push this to spring 2020? And I'm like, nah, you're never going to be quite ready. Let's just get it done. So we literally finished it just as the pandemic was happening.
I was going to ask about the denim jacket, but someone beat me to that. Christian, you've been murdered by a cult. Are you looking forward to getting abducted by UFOs? And Greg, I wanted to ask, when did you set the movie? Because if you take out the iPhone and the camera and the lab scenes, it could have been like at any time period, right? Like, could have been the 80s or the 90s, like... You just remove, like, those little bits, and it could have been, like, at any of those time periods. Like, until then, I didn't know. Like, I saw the cars, I saw everything, and, like, the whole time I was just guessing, like, is this the 80s? Is this the 90s? Like, so
he likes to let people question things.
Yeah.
Which is kind of cool, right?
Yeah.
Keeps a mystery.
Yeah, I was going for 70s with the cars and all that, just the whole feel, Coca-Cola jacket. That was the goal. Yeah, that was that aesthetic. Is she going to be abducted? I don't know. Are you?
Oh, I'm sorry. I spaced out on mine. Yeah, am I?
We'll see. Yeah, I think so. She'll be.
Am I going to be an actual nice girl this time?
Maybe an alien. Maybe she's the abductor.
I'm coming from The Room and The Disaster Artist. What their kind of pressure making your own movie? Like, it has to be so bad is good, or it has to be a cinematic masterpiece?
I think the biggest thing when you're making a film, at least for me, is I just want to have a fun time making it. the beauty of it when you're, when, you know, any creative project, you have no idea how the audience is going to respond to it or what they're going to think. So I, if you have an idea for a movie and you're excited to go make it, you know, go do it and then, you know, put it out there and see what happens. So I just have, you know, what's cool about you guys is, you know, you've supported these movies for so long, and I had a chance to see, you know, The Room with a group. So I know you guys really get into movies. So it's kind of fun to just throw you for a loop or give you something totally different. So I just enjoy the challenge of going out there and making stuff. And if it's even worse than The Room, hey, even better.
You knew I was going to ask a question. So you came to Fairmount, Indiana, where I'm from, and which happens to be where James Dean is from. And this is how the circle of life goes. Because of James Dean, I met her, my fiance. I moved to Berlin from the United States to be with her. And she, much like James Dean inspired you to act, she inspired me to write about all the experiences that I had from my life living where James Dean lives. So it's kind of a full circle, but that leads me to my question. Like, what are your biggest influences as far as acting, as far as both of you guys?
I'd say for me, really, it was definitely James Dean was a huge influence. I don't think we'd be, both of us wouldn't be here without James Dean. So I, you know, 16, I moved to Italy, and I was modeling there. I was living there, and I was in the middle of nowhere in, like, Verona, and this photographer styled me as James Dean. He kept saying, go for the James Dean style. And so ever since then, I was really fascinated by that time of acting. So James Dean, Marlon Brando are the people that I always love the most. And then I got Tommy into those guys, and then the whole "you're tearing me apart" mess happened. But it was all inspired by that. And I think what's beautiful about art is it keeps inspiring people to move and try things. So that, I would say that for me. Mm-hmm.
So I grew up with my grandfather overseas, Europe. So I started in Germany, Wiesbaden, and then from Wiesbaden to Japan, and then from there to Hawaii and California and so on. So I grew up with my grandfather, and he watched all of, like, the old school black and white films and stuff like that. So ever since I was little, I was very animated, and I started acting in Japan. And their acting is very different than, you know, Europe and also America. So I feel like from there, it was so different that I was like, oh, this is kind of cool. And I'm so animated as well already, so I just kind of fell into the the weird little click. And originally, I wanted to be in really good films. And then Greg, I met Greg.
And then I made it. Then I made her dreams come true.
He put me in the best film of my life.
I just like to make dreams come true. So.
Yeah, I definitely made a dream come true. That's for sure. Yeah. So I didn't even know that, you know, there was different categories of films. Like,
I didn't either.
And when I met Greg, it was funny because I got casted in Best Friends as the lead female, and when I did that, I almost said no because he wrote me on Facebook. And that is how, and I was like, I don't know, this is kind of sketchy. Like, I don't know about this, right? So then I met him at a morgue, okay, at night, at like 8:30 at night. He has blood on himself. There's Tommy. He's grunting like, And I'm like, okay. Well, I met them. I started talking to Greg and the filmers and stuff like that, and they seemed really cool. And they were all nice, and I just got these great vibes. So I said, okay. And they're like, oh, so you're in. Like, I guess I'm in. Next thing you know, I'm looking things up, and I'm like, what is this? Oh, my God, what did I just say yes to? And I thought, okay, well, I just got myself into something that, man, nobody's going to really see because I didn't understand The Room. I didn't understand any of this. And then the more I spoke to Greg, the more he educated me on all these other, you know, other adventures in this industry that I've been a part of. And I'm like, wow. Thank you. Thank you, Greg, for bringing me into this amazing world. And thank you all for showing up and supporting us.
Trust your instincts.
Greg has inspired me in ways like never before.
Hi, Greg. I wanted to say I thought the topic of the movie was very interesting. And I'm also very obsessed with cults. Like, I'm not a part of a cult or anything. But, yeah, I just think it's so fascinating what kind of details there are. And I wanted to ask if you had other cult stories that you found out and you were thinking of other material?
Yeah, I read a book I forget what the name of it is now, but I've read a few books about cults, and I also watched Wild Wild Country. It's a really good documentary. It's on Netflix. And also Terror in the Jungle. So I just, the few people I spoke to that joined cults, that went through it and were then survivors, they talked about not knowing why they joined or what took them over when they did, whether it was like a loss, just something inside them that was missing. And so I found it really fascinating talking to them after that experience, because they didn't know why they did it. And also they never felt like they were free of the cult. They always felt paranoid. They always saw, you know, headlights. Were they being tracked? And there was a really good movie about a cult called, it came out like 2011. I always forget the title, but I think it's Martha, Marcy, May, Marlene or something like that. Have you guys seen that movie? No? It's really good. Elizabeth Olsen, one of her early roles. And I love the ending of that film because it really taps into to that theory. So that's sort of what the ending of this film is sort of an homage to, is like she's never really moved on from the cult.
I'm wondering if you see the film get the same response often, or does it vary a lot audience to audience?
You know, the first time we tested it, I was surprised at the moments of humor. Like, I knew it was ridiculous when he's like, my friends are like killed, and then I lost my camera. Like that, I was sort of going for the Nicolas Cage Mandy moment where he's about to be killed and he's like, you fucked up my favorite shirt. So I didn't realize like the elements of comedy there and the audience interaction, which is cool. I mean, I feel like, you know, seeing movies in a theater is the way to do it. And it was great that the audience was interacting with this film. So that's, again, you create a movie, show your friends, show your family, you think you have an idea of how it's going to play, and then you play with an audience, and it's a whole new experience.
Oh, hi, Mark.
Wait, what is it?
Oh.
Macy, I always mess that up.
So you just interrupted me, but it's okay. Just wanted to say, oh, hi, Mark. And then I love your hair.
I love your accent.
That's all I wanted to say. I really love it. Thanks.
Thank you.
Such great hair.
She was saying I should shave my head, and I was like, nah, I don't think so.
Nah. Hey.
Just kidding.
I actually have two questions, yeah. About two films, Best Friends, actually, and this one. The guy playing the preacher, and I think he also played your uncle in Best Friends. Does he always like give 120% like off camera too?
Yes.
Because it's kind of intense.
Half the time you don't even know what's going to come out of his mouth. That is the best part.
Yeah, no, when I sent him the script, he's like, I was like, I want to make sure it's right. Give me another week. And he's like, buddy, you can just send it now. You know I'm going to rewrite the whole thing. So that's, he's a walking one-liner. He's so much fun. So much fun to work with.
Hi, so I really enjoyed that. A lot of fun. It seemed like you were having a lot of fun. There was a lot of love for the craft in the film. And I loved the soundtrack. So could you talk a little bit about that, especially the just really banger track when you're going through the facility with the gun in your hand and the blue and the orange light? I just love those beats.
Yeah, that was a house that was up like an hour and a half up in the mountains that had been abandoned for 100 years. And there was like bats living in the ceiling. There was bat shit all over the floor. And so the guy was like, you can film here, but you got to sign liability that if like the house falls apart while you're in it, we're not responsible. And it was the last thing we shot. And we went all the way up there. I think you were up there that night. Yeah, it was
freezing.
It was freezing cold.
It was freezing.
And I'm in a t-shirt, and this guy who weighs 120 more pounds than me comes up and he's like, look, I used to do wrestling. Yep. I used to do stunts. I'm going to beat the shit out of you, but you're not going to feel anything. It's going to look really good. And so we did a walkthrough, and he beat the living shit out of me.
No, he came back to the car, and he goes, oh, man, I'm hurting.
And then
in front of everybody else, he's like, no, I didn't feel a thing. I was in the car, okay, when he came back.
He was
hurting.
Yeah, and it was brutal. So he threw me we did like 12 takes like that. And I was bruised up pretty well. But our composer is actually Swedish. He was just at the screening in Gothenburg, but his name is Jimmy Lagnefor. We met him through our other producer, Tom Franco, who had worked with him. And we sent him the opening scene, and he, you know, had a lot of fun with it. And so he's great. So, yeah, Swedish.
Hey, you guys. Thank you so much. I really enjoyed the movie, and I have one question about one specific scene. When David gets confronted for the first time, before he, you know, goes for the nail biter, nail clip, the knife, he takes a coat hanger. Is that a Birdemic reference?
I totally see that it would be, but it was all I had at that damn house. So
okay, okay.
Yeah, one question regarding the cult. Was there a lot of like untold backstory that like didn't make it into the movie? Because it was pretty fast paced and everything, but it seems like there was like more to the background.
Yeah, we shot some stuff that we just couldn't ultimately use. And then there was like a week of time we were going to kind of go crazier with the ending, but we just had to limit it because of time. But yeah, the Miracle Valley cult is pretty fascinating. Because like I said, it started in the 60s, then it came back in the 80s in a really weird way. So I was trying to tie in as much as I could, but, you know, we just kind of didn't have time.
It's okay. She does a really good job. Sounds just like him.
Hi, Greg. I just wanted to tell you I really loved the audiobook version of your of The Disaster Artist. I think you did a great job with it.
Well, that's very nice. Thank you.
You're welcome. And the emotions of the book, it felt like a really good read. I wanted to ask, what was the budget for the movie, for this movie?
Well, which movie?
The one we just watched.
I think it was like 2,000 pints of blood. That's all we could afford. The golden blood does not come easy, and I don't have it, unfortunately. So
we got time for one more question.
Well, you're warm. You're warm. Oh, I see what you're saying. Yeah, there actually was 12 Silver Hawks. I can't remember how it was.
Hey guys, the movie was so much fun. Thank you for that. My question would be, which scene changed the most from script to screen?
Actually, she had a good recommendation when she's like, all these characters are getting killed, but we don't quite know them well. So the whole barbecue scene where we had that was her suggestion. So if you didn't like it, talk to her.
Sorry.
But that scene was added in, and then the
creepy scene was also added in the camper.
Oh yeah.
And there was a lot of that was cut out, thank God. It was cringing.
Yeah, some necrophilia, never mind. And then the ending was very different. We were going to have the two girls ram the priest with the truck, and his head was going to go through the window, and then she was going to throw him on the ground and take the crowbar and like say, I'm going to give you one more blow, and then he was going to pop up and say, job, and then we scrapped that. That was his idea. I'm like, nah, we'll... It was just too complicated, but yeah, I'd say the ending and a few scenes here and there. But for the most part, like, you know, I knew what we had, so what we could shoot. Okay, so to get you guys ready for The Room, the first live showing in Germany, I have the original draft of the script when I was roommates with Tommy. And we are going to read a scene from it really quickly to get you guys warmed up. It's different than the movie. There's no Denny. There's no Chris R. It is incredible. So I just need a Johnny. Who's ever wanted to play Johnny? Whose dream was it to play Johnny? All right, all the way in the back. Come on up. And then, yeah, and then who wants to play Mark? You want to play Mark? Okay, come on up. And you're gonna you play Lisa.
I've never seen this.
And... Yeah, you
never
seen it.
Okay.
No, I haven't. And then here tonight is one of my good pals. Actually, I was fortunate because of The Room to go to Iceland, and he is a Room aficionado. His name is Huliger. He's going to be the narrator, because in this script, there's actually narration. It's sort of like a play. It makes no sense. You'll love it.
Hey,
18.
Can we pass this?
So
you got pages?
Who's
Who's Johnny? You're Johnny?
Okay.
Mark.
Actually, yeah. There, do that. There you go. Just need it. And then yeah, because when you pop in,
And
what scene are we eating?
What scene are we eating?
We are. I don't know. we're reading pages 18 to 23.
Okay.
All right.
Start with 18. This is Johnny and Lisa.
Okay. Okay. All right. I'm gonna read. I'm the narrator. I'm gonna. Since we are in Germany, I'm gonna read it as in the voice of Werner Herzog. Scene five. Smiling, she very quickly straightens the bed. Then she washes the coffee cups, puts the candles away, and changes to jeans and t-shirt. She puts pasta in the oven and settles in the chair with a magazine. Shortly, there is a sound of a key in the door. Johnny enters the apartment with one red rose.
Hi, how are you?
He gives Lisa the rose and takes his blazer off and sits down on the couch. She's smiling and putting the rose to her nose.
Thank you. I'm doing great. You are so charming. You always give me flowers. You're so unique. Let me kiss you.
She gets up and kisses Johnny on the cheek.
What's cooking?
Pasta. Pasta, your favorite dish, my sweet pie.
You're awfully happy today. What's up? Did you get a client?
I called dozens of clients, but no one needs my services. It's very tough. Do you feel like eating now?
I'm starving. What else did you do today? You're in a very good mood.
Let me fix pasta.
I'll take a shower.
Johnny disappears into the bathroom. Lisa waits until the water is running and dials a number on the phone.
Hi, Mark. I miss you.
I just saw you. What are you talking about? Are you crazy?
Sorry, my darling. I just wanted to hear your sexy voice. Can I tell you something else? I like how you put your sexy hands around my body. You excite me so. And I love you.
Is Johnny there?
Yeah, he's in the shower. But I like you better.
But I don't understand you. Why do you do that?
Because I love you.
Sarcastically.
You don't care, do you?
Yes, I do care.
See you later.
Yes, I do care. But we agreed that it's over between us.
I understand. I'm with you. It's over. Secret. I still have feelings for you. But I guess you don't care.
Yes, I do care. Don't drive yourself crazy.
I have to go now. See you later. My darling.
The water stops running.
Don't call me that.
Okay. Bye.
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 Johnny comes out of the bathroom with a towel around his middle and goes to the closet.
Who are you talking to?
My mother.
Is she okay?
Oh. She tested for breast cancer, and now she's talking about dying.
It's no big deal these days, is it?
No, I'm not worried.
She is preparing dinner and putting everything on the table.
Dinner is ready.
They sit down to eat.
What happened last night? I don't remember anything. Did we make love?
You don't remember? You poor little thing. You don't remember when you hit me?
Johnny is yelling.
Hit you? I would never do that, even if I was drunk. You must be kidding. It's not true, is it? Do you have a bruise?
Yes, it's true.
They are eating.
I will never drink again. I feel sick. I can't eat anymore.
He is pushing his plate away.
I'm strong. Don't worry about it. I need some money. I have to buy a new dress.
How much do you want?
Around 300.
Why so much?
He pulls out his wallet and hands her three $100 bills.
Thank you, Johnny.
She kisses him on his cheek.
You're always so generous with me.
I have to be. We will be married soon. You love me, don't you?
Of course I do.
Lisa gets up, clears the table, and changes her clothes.
I am going to the roof to straighten out my head.
Is that me?
Yep.
Are you okay?
I'm fine.
Don't worry about it.
Thank you for this powerful impression. Okay, get your spoons ready.
Yeah. So one thing, obviously the participation is the best part of this movie, and my favorite act is late in the movie, Johnny's really upset, and he goes up to his dresser, and he pulls the first drawer out, he pulls the second drawer out, and then he's like, ah. So when that happens all together, you want to yell, one, two, fuck it. It'll work beautifully, trust me. But anyway, all right, guys, enjoy the room. Thank you so much.
Thank you.